Big show for you here today. It is the wide receiver position preview. Yes, that is right. It is time. This is where I'm the most comfortable. Okay, we are in my wheelhouse. And we've got Ray Garvin in the house to do it with us, man. Reception perception meets the Trinity. Okay, we're going to get your wide receiver picks right this year. We've got sleepers. We've got red light, yellow light players. We've got green light guys, the ones we really want to draft this year. The position is loaded. So we got to get these picks right. All right, all that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. If you can't tell, I got a little pep in my step today because we are in a very comfortable little sandbox here for me to be in, and if you can't tell from the voice laughing along in the background, a very comfortable sandbox for him to be playing in as well. It is our guy, Ray Garvin. Ray, we've got the wide receiver preview here, so reception perception meets Trinity. We're going to ride today, my friend. How you doing?
Dude, I mean, I feel like we already had a full-blown podcast behind the scenes just talking about different receiver art. We're talking about 27 class Harmon receiver archetypes, all kinds of stuff in the last 6 minutes of our pre-show, but excited to be back another week. And I mean, it's just going to be a good show. Something, a position that you are incredibly passionate about, as am I. And then we get to just talk about that and how it relates to people and their drafts. Like, what better show, man? Excited to be here.
No doubt. There's definitely some, you know, dynasty freaks and geeks who would have loved the A.D. Mitchell would have been the best receiver 15 years ago discussion that we had in the pre-show. I don't think we'll be talking too much about A.D. Mitchell, but I can promise you we are going to get into a real sicko section for the very final segment of the show. But we've got a ton of great things coming your way here today on the wide receiver position preview as positional preview week continues here on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. We're going to start off with a big picture view of the wide receiver position this year, strategy, how to approach it in your drafts. Then we're going to do, as we did yesterday with Scott Pienowski for quarterbacks, green light players at ADP, yellow and red light players at ADP, sleepers, and then a draft day blueprint segment that comes right from my big fat draft day blueprint piece that's coming out later this week. Going to get a little sneak preview. We're going to hit a preview section of that every single week here on the show. But as mentioned, let's start at the top here, Ray, an overall state of the wide receiver position, our best draft strategies for the year. I'll throw it to you this way. I think every time I write the wide receiver position preview, you know, going into any given season here for Yahoo, I pretty much am able to say we are in the golden age of wide receiver play in the NFL right now. It gets better and better every single year because there's a new great draft class coming in. And even if the rookie class this year maybe isn't quite as, you know, the names aren't quite as sexy maybe as some of the past classes we've had here, still I feel like the depth, the quality at this position is better than ever. So number one, do you agree with that? And number two, how does that kind of then approach your draft strategy here as we head into 2026?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. We are in a golden age of receiver. And I think we are also in this golden age of identifying good offensive situations. So even when you're looking at this top 10 wide receiver list, I think even inside of this, Matt, we start to tier it out and sort it by like ceiling, right? I'm looking at Cincinnati, Los Angeles, Dallas, these teams where their quarterbacks have the potential to throw for 4,500 yards, 40 touchdowns, just makes the floor of some of these guys so incredibly safe. Yet the ceiling, it honestly could win you a league. You've got Puka Nacua doing 220 and two in the postseason, your week 16, 17. Like it's a really cool time to be invested in this position. So 100% agree with you, man.
Yeah. And the couple of the points that you made there are really part of why I think in addition to just, I think that, I believe that the talent at this position is just unparalleled right now. And that goes all the way down to, you know, youth sports. Like these guys are doing 7-on-7. I don't know, since they're in freaking diapers, you know, like they're running routes when they're like, a guy goes into the NFL draft. They've got, you know what I'm talking
about.
My
kids are in it right now.
Running, those boys are running routes for like, if, let's say, you know, I don't know where your kids are, you know, from like a developmental standpoint, you know, in terms of, are you thinking about they're going to play football long term? But let's just say Ray Garvin's boys head into the NFL, you know, in however many years from now, they will have thousands and thousands and thousands of routes logged mentally, physically, the whole deal. So that's a big part of why wide receivers are better than ever. But also, you mentioned the ecosystems and the coaching and what that does for these guys as well. You know, our Draft Day Blueprint segment is about ecosystems and some of the new play callers coming off of the trees, you know, that are proliferating around the NFL right now. But we know who the inner circle guys are. You know, it's the Kyle Shanahans, it's the Sean McVays, it's the Ben Johnsons, now Liam Cohen, these newer guys as well. They are just opening up more and more roles at the position, Ray, to find these guys and find the right deployment. A player like Puka Nacua would never have existed in the NFL 15, 20 years ago, because the way that he plays the position, the way that he is lined up, I'll even take it a step further. A guy like Cooper Kupp, who was the Triple Crown player in the NFL. I remember early on in his career writing for Reception Perception being like, this role that he's playing right now truly did not exist in the NFL. When I started charting receivers, he came into the NFL in 2017. I started charting receivers league-wide data 2013, 2014. That's not that long. Like, there's been a real shift in an evolution because of these play callers creating new archetypes within archetypes to allow different guys to not just be good, but a player like Puka Nacua, a player like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who are the consensus number two and three ranked player at the position here on Yahoo this season. These guys have it. They're the best in the league. Like, they're not just good players. They're some of the best players in the league, some of the most productive players in the league right now. So that's a big reason why we see the receiver position in this golden age too. And to that point, Ray, and this is where I think we can start talking draft strategy, despite the fact that there's more receivers like that are good than ever.
Yeah.
It has also highlighted the difference between good and great. And that's why it's still important to come away, in my opinion, you tell me if you disagree, still important to come away with a great receiver at some point in your drafts here.
There's a huge difference, right? Even again, I'm looking at this top 10. I think all these guys can be good, but I do think there are some levels inside of here where, as good as I think, and I'm just using this for an example, A.J. Brown can be this season in New England with Drake May. It can feel like a resurgence from early Philadelphia, where he had back-to-back 1,400-yard seasons. When I'm looking at Puka and Jamar, if they only give me 1,400 yards, I'm kind of like, hey, I expected a little bit more, right? Like, I know when you say that, you're like, dude, that's nothing to sniff at. But yeah, Chase and Puka Nacua, and I mean, we've seen CeeDee Lamb have an 1,800-yard season in the NFL. And again, if you could come away with one of those guys, whether it's from the obvious list of names, or if you've got something where you're like, I think the next one up to get inside of that tier or push for that, because let's not act like everybody saw Offensive Player of the Year Jaxon Smith-Njigba coming. If we did, he wouldn't have been drafted right next to Marvin Harrison Jr. last year. So if there's some strong signal, some conviction that you're like, I think it's going to be this guy that has the chance to get into that upper echelon of score, there's a difference between having that receiver on your team versus a really good one.
And there's a reason, you know, you bring up the name Jaxon Smith-Njigba, that he was a guy that was discussed so much this offseason. You know, it's like, who's going to be the next version of that? Because he, I think, really exemplifies how this position has changed. And both from, he doesn't look like the typical number one receiver from, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, when it was these big hulking X receivers, you know, Julio Jones and AJ Green and these guys, when they were the elite number ones. JSN's a different version of that, because he came from being like a slot only, you know, route runner type. And I had a lot of confidence in him being able to win on the outside, because he's been one of the best man coverage beaters I've charted over the last, you know, few years, even dating back to his draft class. So he was definitely in one segment there, kind of the guy that could be a multiple position player, the whole deal like that. But again, I mentioned he was a slot-based player previously. That slot-based player is kind of going away right now. This was something that we saw last season, and, you know, I had a lot of conversations with, like, J.J. Zacharyson about this in the offseason, where the wide receiver two scoring across fantasy football was really flat last year. You know, it was just there. That guy didn't really exist in the same way. Those were the most disappointing players in fantasy last year, kind of the wide receiver twos and beyond, which makes sense intuitively if there's a ton of quality players at the position. And we're seeing such an influx of heavy personnel, which again is very instructive to the JSN breakout. It's not just that we're seeing those targets kind of disappear and the route percentage disappear. And I'm curious if you found this in the Trinity at all, like the route participation for those wide receiver twos disappear. It's when the tight ends come on the field, the more heavier bodies come on the field, the guys that still get the targets are those downfield number one receivers. So there can be an even more intense consolidation for the number one player, which is why when we're looking at like the wide receiver ones in fantasy, there is still a difference between those guys and then the next buckets, which is why as much as I want to be strong at running back this year, I also don't want to not have a guy that I think has a wide receiver one outlook as well.
I mean, I just remember watching, it was the game where Puka had 225. And I vividly remember them in offensive sets because I think Adams was hurt. If I'm not mistaken, Adams missed that game. And it was Puka and a bunch of other guys, right? So it was just ISO Puka, right? They're in three tight end sets and there's one receiver on the field. One. And it was Puka Nacua, and defenses get cute, right? Oh, you want to bring that in? We can one-on-one him. We'll just have a safety kind of watching what's going on. But McVay's so good. One split second of that safety taking his eyes off of that player, and it was Puka Nacua down the sideline, and it felt like it was over and over again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, being able to identify the one, this is why selfishly, Matt, I don't want to see Dallas go heavier. I need Pickens and Lamb on the field at the same time because, hell, I don't know who it would be. It would probably be a flip-flop. One series it's CD, another series it's Pickens. No. I need both of them on the field at the same time. But this is why identifying that caliber of receiver is a little bit different than finding a strong number two or a number one that can be pulled off of the field. There are levels to it. And I think this is what makes this type of conversation so incredibly fun, especially this early part of the kind of the draft strategy season.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think when we look at these guys that are among the top 10, you know, top 12 at the position, which is, as we're showing on the screen, our top 10 consensus ranked players here at Yahoo. It's Jamar Chase, Puka Nacua, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Drake London, Nico Collins, George Pickens, AJ Brown, and then Devontae Smith and T. Higgins round out the top 12. For me, I think my second tier of receivers goes into like wide receiver 15. So there's just a huge and all those guys are really attractive targets. It's just kind of depends sort of on where you're selecting in the draft and everything like that. Those are guys that are never leaving the field. Like all the players that to me I have ranked in the top 15 are guys that are just never going to leave the field, even there if there are heavy personnel packages and everything. That is more so the discussion that we'll have as we start to get into tier three, tier four, like trying to pick the right guys who are our green light players in those sections of the draft. So with that, we are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we'll start to look at some of those green light players as we get further and further down the board. We will get into that right after this. All right, so I rattled off the top 12 players at the position on the other side of the break here, Ray. And you made a little bit of a face when I said, I think tier two goes all the way down to wide receiver 15. Can we on the screen call up let's call it wide receiver 11 to whatever it is kind of group here? You tell me where you think it cuts off here. If we're looking at, I read off the top 10 at the position and then 11 and 12 is Devontae Smith. I think guys like Malik Nabers and Chris Olave. Now I have Zay Flowers ranked ahead of Rashee Rice, but I kind of think that, and I have another guy that we'll talk about, Jalen Waddle here is my wide receiver 12 this season because I don't have AJ Brown in my top 12 receivers this year when we get into the red flag players. But so for me, where do you think the cutoff is kind of in that second tier? I think we can all agree the first tier, we know who those players are, but where do you think it kind of drops off at when we're no longer in clear wide receiver one range?
Okay, well, I can't say 20, but I am much higher on Tetterell McMillan this year. Like, I would put him personally inside of my top 15. Mm. I'm going to be totally honest with you.
No Bryce Young concerns for you? Like,
Oh, yeah.
You're waving those in?
I've got significant Bryce Young concerns. I just don't have any concern about him being the primary target earner in Carolina. So while the pizza is small, I'm just anticipating that McMillan gets a huge slice of the pie. Not saying it's going to be the most efficient or pretty thing, but I do believe I've got him projected for another 30 targets than what we have him for over here at Yahoo. So if you're going to tell me this is a player, Matt, that's, let's just say, pushing for the 140 to 155 target range, historically, those are 1,200, 1,300, 1,400-yard type players. And I truly feel and believe, and looking at the usage, that he's in line to get something of that nature. But the list in general, I'm with you. A.J. Brown, not that high, so he would actually fall back. But I can make a case for Emeka Egbuka. I can make a case for Ladd McConkey taking that step forward. I actually wrote about him being one of the players to take a step up. I think this tier two is just awesome. It is an awesome group of receivers that can give you wide receiver one, top 10 upside weeks any given week that you play.
And that, I think, is where we can start our green light segment here, because two of the guys for me that are clear green light players in that range of the draft that you're talking about there are Emeka Egbuka and Ladd McConkey. And honestly, I've had a tough time picking between those guys, and they go in pretty similar range from an ADP perspective. And when you look at my overall rankings, I am very much in on those players. In one way where I kind of want to make sure, and again, as I've talked about, your different position strategies will affect how you attack other positions. And for me, because I am really wanting you guys to not fall behind at running back, and yet I also want you to be able to pick one strong wide receiver and then also hit at least one of these players in the fourth round range, I just really am not taking early quarterbacks and really not taking the vanity tight ends. But we will talk about those positions, or we'll talk about the tight end position later this week. So again, sticking on wide receivers, these players in the fourth and fifth round range are just so appealing at this position, specifically the fourth round. So Emeka Egbuka, Ladd McConkey, you're looking at my overall rankings. I am ahead of the overall Yahoo ADP on both of those players. Tell me why you like Egbuka. Tell me why you like Ladd McConkey. And do you have a preference between those two guys?
Preference between the two? I promise you, we're gonna take some hard stances on this show. But right here, if I had 10 shots at this one, I'd take 5 Egbukas and I'd take 5 Ladd McConkeys. I love the pathway for both. I love the quarterback and the offensive projected environment of the Chargers. I like the role in which Ladd McConkey occupies with a coordinator that we've seen operate with two wide receivers, not similar, maybe overall physical, Tyreek Hill. Nobody is the cheetah, but I think he can deploy Ladd McConkey in some of the ways that made Tyreek Hill the number one overall voted player on the NFL top 100 some years ago. I like Egbuka taking that step forward in this offense where, as good as Godwin is, this is why Emeka was drafted. This is why he was drafted. They felt good enough about him. The move to not really fight to bring Mike Evans back, I don't think this was because they had Jalen McMillan or because they like Chris Godwin. No, they believe that Emeka Egbuka can take that step forward for Baker Mayfield and this offense and operate as a true number one. So I'm not going to sit on the fence every pick, but right here, if I had 10 shots at this one, Matt, I'd take 5 Lads, 5 Emekas, and I think there's a clear path for both of them to be awesome this year.
So I'm kind of sitting on the fence on this one too, but I'm going to put one cheek off the fence. And I will say, if we're doing 10 times, like we simulate this situation 10 times, I will probably go 6 Egbuka, 4 McConkey. And I love Ladd McConkey, but the tiebreaker to me, Ray, is just as simple, and this can be totally stupid, is that I just think the way these two guys are built physically, I think I can trust Egbuka handling 140 targets more than Ladd McConkey, who might be, you know, I love Ladd. I think what he showed as a rookie was unbelievable. And he pretty much lost, I would say, almost 0% of that as a separator from year one to year two. He just didn't run quite as hot on contested catches. And he lost some of the layup work to Keenan. I really don't care about that. Like, he's an obvious statistical bounce back player. But I don't love that through 2 years in the NFL, you know, Ladd McConkey's had to like scrape himself off the turf when he takes some of these bigger hits, where I think Egbuka body type wise is set up to be a really high volume player. And both of these guys are getting, we all know Ladd McConkey is getting the offensive ecosystem boost with Mike McDaniel coming in there. We've talked about that plenty and should continue to talk about it. Like, it's a big deal. I'm with you. He can have like that pre-snap motion role that Tyreek Hill did when he was a dominant player for the Miami Dolphins. And I believe Ladd is massively talented enough to do that. But I also think Emeka Ibuka getting a role flip from being the X receiver for this team last year to now being the Z receiver, according to offensive coordinator Zach Robinson, suits his game so well. I essentially view the role that Ibuka is going to have as someone we were talking about in the pre-show chat. He's going to be used a lot like Drake London was for the Falcons previously. And because of that, I just think that target ceiling for him, getting layup targets, but also vertical looks, is really, really high this year. So I like both these players. They're both green light players to me. I give a slight edge to Ibuka right now.
Yeah, and I have Ibuka projected a little better than I do Ladd McConkey, but even in mine, I mean, they're right there. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys have really good kind of floor cases, but I do have Ibuka two spots higher than Ladd McConkey in my personal projections as well. But I like both of these guys.
So one other player that you have is a green light guy. And I think this kind of goes against some of the, you know, don't chase injury situations that we preach on the show here. At least Scott and I are pretty consistently preaching. It is Malik Nabers for you, who you wrote down as a green light player. I'm not opposed to this one, but I want you to make the case here for Malik Nabers. And because I know some people listening will be scared to draft a guy coming off of a major injury.
I too was scared. I promise you, Matt. I had it reflected this way in my personal projections. I saw the video clip of him running at the softball tournament. It looked like he could barely make it to first base. It was no good. And then I saw the practice clips. And I do care, right? I don't care about how many interceptions the quarterback throws. No, I just want to see him moving around. I want to see this. And he looked fine to me. He looked good to me. And it seems like they're managing him well. We still have 4 weeks until we get to the regular season. And I'm going to tell you what. Malachi Fields, Calvin Austin, Juju Smith-Schuster, Isaiah. Like, if Nabers is 80% and on the field, he's getting targeted more than anybody. I don't give a damn what they're saying about Isaiah Likely. If Nabers is out there where he's being drafted, and anybody that's in this YouTube chat that watches my content knows, if there's a receiver coming off of a debilitating injury, I'm out. No, thank you. I'll let somebody else deal with it. I'll see you next year. I've done a complete 180 with Malik Nabers. He's young enough. He's 80% of Nabers is still an elite type wide receiver, especially if you're going to get the volume. So I still love him where he's at, Matt.
I am a little more conflicted than you. I'm definitely, he went from a guy that was just a pure red light player to me, you know, to then we get him in training camp and we see him moving pretty well. He's at least, I wouldn't even call him a yellow light player. He's just someone I can't go full green light on. He's just kind of there. Depends on the room. But I echo a lot of what you said, man, that, I mean, he looks good out there. He hasn't participated in team drills yet. I don't even know that he's done 7-on-7. It's been mostly individual stuff, but that is less important here when, as Ray mentioned, and it's good to remember this. Still got 4 weeks to go. All right. We got a long way for some of these guys to ramp themselves up. So we do have a long way to go here before week one kicks off. But yeah, I mean, even some of the names you mentioned there, I don't think guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, like they're not even going to be on the roster. But a guy like Malachi Fields, who sounds like he is right now the leader in the clubhouse to be the second receiver. I like Malachi. I think he can be an interesting player, but he's not going to be like a walks off the bus with 8 targets type of player. He's probably more of the on ball, allows Nabers to move around, does more of the dirty work stuff, goes like runs the vertical routes. And I actually think that's good news for Nabers because it's pretty amazing, Ray. I'm sure from a usage standpoint, he still was checking out pretty well for you in the first 3 weeks of last season. And that's despite the fact that he was running 25 in the games I charted for him, which is the only games he played, like 25% or more of his routes were go routes. Like, he was running the Russell Wilson offense and he was still getting a ton of volume in a very inefficient role.
I just want y'all to look at this screen right now. These wonderful graphics done by our Yahoo team. Mooney, Malachi Fields, and Isaiah Likely. That don't do nothing for me, Harmon. If Nabers is on the field, this dude is so far beyond where they'll have a role. Get the hell out of the way and clear stuff out for number one. And you're right. Yeah. They're running them downfield all with Russell Wilson. And he's still commanding it. I'm still having flashbacks of what he did to the Dallas Cowboys early in the season. It's scary. I get it. And here's what I'll say. The expectation early on, I'm not thinking that he's going to look exactly like Malik Nabers week one of the regular season if he's out there. Week two of the regular season out is if he's out there. But if he's healthy enough to be on the field and work himself into this, by the time I need him to get on the gas and go, we should be ramped up. We should feel a lot better about Nabers at that point.
I think the best way to sort of end this conversation on Nabers, and I'm glad we're having an extended conversation on him because he's a really interesting player to talk about, and again, juggling the injuries and the ceiling and all that. If you were to sit down, Ray, and do your real life receiver rankings, you know, not fantasy or anything, where would you place Malik Nabers as we're talking about, 80% or this or that percent of the player, like 100% Malik Nabers fully healthy, where would you rank him? You know, and you're like your real life receiver rankings.
Real life receiver rankings, and I'm not going to try to be. I'm going to take in the right now, not be prisoner of the moment. He is 100% healthy. Jamar, JSN, Puka,
Jefferson,
right in that mix. He's got to be right in that mix. He's right there. I'm thinking Jefferson. I think Pickens is a top five talent. Nabers is right there. Inside that big four, big top five for sure.
Yeah, I think I've thought a lot about this. I would say, you know, Jamar number one, Jefferson still number two to me. Yeah, and then it's JSN, it's Puka. I think St. Brown. I think Nico Collins is in that conversation. And yeah, then it's Malik Nabers. So it's like five, six. You know, Drake London belongs in the conversation to me too, but it's very like... We haven't seen Nabers fully realized, right? You know, like we just haven't seen them over the, like we just got a bigger body of work on guys like Nico Collins and Drake London. So it's almost not really fair. But just to put a period on the end of this sentence, this is my favorite Malik Nabers stat from Reception Perception. He had an 84.4% success rate versus press, which is a very small sample, obviously, last year, but it was in the games charted last year. That's a 98th percentile score. These are the following players who have been at or above that 98th percentile since I've charted receivers from 2014 to current that have also taken fewer than 30% of their sampled snaps in the slot. So 98th percentile press beaters and don't play in the slot. AJ Brown, Devontae Adams, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson did it three times. Odell Beckham Jr. did it three times, and now Malik Nabers last year in a small sample. So if we can get that stretched out over a full year, yeah, that's a top five receiver in the NFL, period. Like a true tier one receiver in the league, and that's why you get him in the third round here, and you maybe ignore some of those injury conversations. So yeah, pretty special career ahead of Malik Nabers here. Give me another one of your green light guys that you think is in a really good spot in ADP right now.
Well, you had such a good list, Harmon. You had such a good list. So I tried to go a little deeper, right? Maybe find some value for our drafters. Stephon Diggs for me. And I know that the Laremy Tunsil injury absolutely is going to impact Jaden Daniels. That sucks. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Diggs was good last year. This offense needed another pass catcher. Terry McLaurin was banged up last year. He had a down season. Diggs is still really, really good. And where you're getting him relative to, let's go down the path that Jaden Daniels picks up where he left off his rookie year and is not as... I mean, the offense was terrible last year. It was one of the oldest offense, I think the oldest offense in the NFL last year. Cliff Kingsbury, you could say what you want about. It's a different system, different environment. Year three, Jaden Daniels on a team they were never going in with Treylon Burks, as much as I love me some Burks. They weren't going in with Treylon Burks, Luke McCaffrey, and Antonio Williams. He's working with the threes, Harmon. He's working with the threes, working with first-team offense as the third receiver.
Listen. Not to cut you off, but I do just want on the record, I was never a Treylon Burks guy, but I'm also the guy that's here, you know, making jokes about how I'm so obsessed with Rashad Bateman that my therapist won't let me talk about Rashad Bateman. So if I can have Bateman, you can have Burks. It's fine.
Thank
okay.
You.
Everybody's allowed to have their
we
say.
We all got some.
I still got the candle lit for Jahan Dotson, that's the thing. Whenever I'm like, listen, I was right about Treylon Burks, I'm like, but I had him ranked behind Jahan Dotson. So it wasn't that right.
Listen, I liked me some Burks coming out, but I quickly realized, hey, it wasn't going to work out in Tennessee. But the point, they weren't going in with him, Harmon. They weren't going in with Treylon as the two. But Daniels, everybody's excited. Where's Daniels going? Top 12. He is going in drafts in which quarterbacks you're using too. He's going early. People are excited about what Jaden Daniels can do in 2QB super flex leagues. People are like, hey, we are back. Jaden Daniels is in play. So Stephon Diggs, a player who 1,000 yards the year after his ACL tear. It didn't take him a year to get right. He dropped right back into a new offense, a new situation, new coordinator for him. Another 1,000-yard seasons for Diggs. I like him inside of this offense, playing that slot role with Jaden Daniels. Let Terry do what Terry does. Give me some Diggs at you know, later in your drafts. This is a player that I think can absolutely outkick his ADP coverage.
Yeah, 115th overall ADP. I really like it. I'm curious to see by the time we're doing real drafts, you know, right before week one and stuff, where does it stand there? But at the same time, the Laremy Tunsil injury, I think, will actually probably keep the ADPs depressed on all these guys. But on the Laremy Tunsil injury front, Ray, one thing I thought was like pretty striking going back and charting Diggs last year compared to 2024 is that it basically, like, the results were basically the same, 2024 player and the 2025 player. And there's a freaking ACL tear in the middle of there. You know, that's really impressive for Stephon Diggs. And I also think, like, 2 weeks ago, shoot, not even 2 weeks ago, like a week ago, Terry McLaurin would have been in this green light players at ADP. I do not have him as a green light player anymore. Not like full red or anything like that, but he's definitely somebody I'm coming down lower on because Diggs is going to command those easy button layup targets. Going to be harder to access the vertical stuff without Laremy Tunsil. So I agree with you that Diggs is a really good target for me. I want to go to a player that you and I talked a lot about last year. We haven't talked about recently. And that is Rome Odunze, 67th overall ADP on Yahoo right now, which to me is just way too low relative to the other Bears pass catchers. Obviously, tough to talk about Luther Burden right now because he is reportedly going to miss the rest of the month, like be shut down till week one. We'll see how that plays out. He could get back at practice at any time. We got a long way to go. And I like Luther Burden, by the way. I'm not out on Luther Burden whatsoever, but I don't think it makes any sense that Burden goes so much higher than Rome Odunze. So to me, Odunze is a very, very clear green light player. If he's available in the sixth round, as he is on Yahoo drafts, as he was in a mock draft that we did today, it's like for content, it's stupid, but every time I'm in the sixth round and he's there, I'm going to take him every single time. Ray, do you feel like he's a green light player for you this year?
Yes. I tweeted it out the other day. It's like people act like this guy forgot how to play football, that his foot was hanging on by a thread. And this, I hate that we've gotten to this point where I think the narratives on social media, Twitter in particular, kind of put these two against each other. Like everyone had to make an either or decision, right? Like you have to pick one or the other. Well, first of all, Caleb Williams, MVP caliber type quarterback that we think can take a step forward year two with Ben Johnson, check mark. They got rid of DJ Moore. They got rid of Olamide Zaccheaus, who, whether you like him or not, he's about to be a starting wide receiver for the Falcons. So he was always going to take some opportunity, right? And when Odunze started the season off, Matt, those first 5 weeks, he was incredible. Incredible. Yeah. He hurt his foot. Things went downhill. They integrate the rookies a little bit more, but they cleared out this room. No DJ Moore, no Olamide Zaccheaus. And it's like you couldn't like Rome Odunze. Like it was just sacrilegious to even say anything positive about this guy because Luther Burden was going to nuke him from all opportunity, and that was never going to be the case. That was never going to be the case. I tweeted this out, man. And I don't know if you have looked at this and talked about it, but you think about Chicago and Ben Johnson. Oh, they just run 11 personnel, three wide receivers on the field. They were 23rd, depending on the service that you look at, 23rd in the NFL in 11, top six in both 12 and 13 personnel. So my theory was the other day, if Burden were going to miss a little bit of time or if it was going to slow things down, could we not see Chicago consolidate bigger, right? They drafted Sam Roush in the third round. They have Cole Kmet and Colson Loveland. They already ran 13 and 12 at a top six rate last season. Could you not see Odunze being the ISO receiver on the field in 13, those bigger sets? Or, you know, he's still going to command opportunity in two tight end sets. It shouldn't be this far apart. He's an incredibly talented player that we've already seen flashes of upside. You don't have to pick. It's not an either or. It's all of the above. And if Rome is out there, this is still valuable time missed by Luther Burden.
Yeah, we're on the same page on this one here. Something that Rome's actually said to me in February that it bothers me a little bit about the Luther Burden thing is just where that he felt last year when he got hurt. It wasn't so much physically playing through the injury. It was the time missed in practice, like falling out of rhythm of a very detailed based offense that he felt was the thing that was the most difficult to come back from. And now Luther Burden's going to be missing that practice time. So yeah, Burden goes to me from a guy that I was ahead of, and I'm probably still will be ahead of overall Yahoo ADP, because we're actually one of the platforms that I think has Burden pretty reasonably priced in like the 50s. I just think Rome should also be in the 50s. Kind of the dumb, like simple way to say it is that we've basically have only one season of these guys in a, like we all agree that the Shane Waldron, you know, Caleb Williams rookie year offense was a mess. So I think we can kind of throw that out. So we really only have like one season available for both of these guys in a well-designed Ben Johnson offense. And we kind of have a great half of a season from Rome Odunze that legitimately was a top 20 receiver by any efficiency metric that you look at. And then we kind of have like a great back half, not even really a full back half season for Luther Burden, you know? So it's like, because he wasn't available in the first half because he was injured in the off season. Rome wasn't really available in the second half because he was injured during the season. So I think it's pretty equal between these two guys, like their case for a big, massive breakout. But I love your point about Odunze as the ISO receiver, because that makes, I think it can be Burden too. And he was useful in a small sample in some of those situations last year. But like, man, Rome Odunze can beat man coverage. He's a really good route runner that separates in the intermediate area where you're going to take those shots off play action from heavy personnel. And he's a great blocker as well. So I think he could be out of there and out there in a lot of those situations. And last point, and I'll use this to transition to the next green light player that we're going to talk about here. This is one of those reasons, Ray, where we don't want to just like, oh, it's crowded. Like, I don't know who, just, I'm not taking any of these guys. Cause yeah, what happens when one of these guys get hurt? If Burden misses a chunk of time, Odunze is going to be a big riser. I think the same thing could be said for the Jags wide receivers, which is why I think Parker Washington right now is a green light player, because I'm buying what they're selling about him being the guy that's never going to leave the field. Where do you stand on the great Jaguars receiver debate of 2026?
Yeah, I'm buying, man. I'm buying. I'm smiling because I'm buying P. Wash. I'm buying P. Wash. They're saying all the right things, but more importantly, it sounds like Parker Washington is doing all the right things for Jacksonville in practice. All we can react to, Matt, are the clips and the information that's presented to us. And every time I see something about Parker Washington, it's how good he practiced, how many catches he came down with, how many touchdowns he scored, how the coach gushes about him, the quarterback gushes about him. And then you see what he did down that back stretch. The Jacksonville, they think they're slick. If you didn't see the video that they put out, I believe it was Friday or Saturday, Matt, I think it starts out with Parker Washington catching the ball. And I knew it before I saw the next clip. Next person was Brian Thomas Jr. over the middle. Next person was Jacoby Myers catching the ball. The next person was So they're trying not to tip it off that it's Washington. Like all of these guys are equal across the board, but I'm just not buying it. I think Washington, I think there are some people out there that kind of don't want to buy in for whatever reason, right? Whether it's Trevor Lawrence, a little bit of apprehension. He can't be as good as he was down the stretch. He was the doggone quarterback one, I believe, the second half of the season, him and Josh Allen. Brian Thomas Jr. still there. Yes, he'll take work. But I think Parker Washington is the one. I've got him projected to lead this team as far as receiving, counting stats, and points per game. But the other guys are going to be involved, and it's going to limit how high I think his ceiling can actually be.
Yeah, I just think at the beginning of the process, I thought, you know, it was going to be Parker Washington rotating with Travis Hunter when Travis Hunter comes onto the field. And, you know, if you listen to like John Shipley, and I reposted a video that he did, like he believes that Travis Hunter might be 80% defensive snaps and 50% of the offensive snaps, which is crazy if that's what happens. But I thought if Washington is going to be the guy to lose snaps to Travis Hunter, then he can't get too high. But now it sounds like Hunter is going to be mixing in as an outside receiver, which is actually bad news for Myers and BTJ. So I am going to have Washington as the highest ranked Jags receiver, kind of flipping that with Brian Thomas Jr. there. So ultimately, I still want you to take shots on all these Jags receivers, Travis Hunter included now as well. I want you to take like late round shots on him too. 50%, that might not happen. 50% might be good enough. We'll see. It's just one of the right answer offenses. You'll want to take shots here. And I think Parker Washington at a ADP right now, the last 7 days on Yahoo, 78th overall. That's a perfectly fine one to me. I want to just hit a guy that we both had here. DJ Moore. This is one of the players that I've probably changed my mind on the most. Like, the more I've looked at DJ Moore, and I mentioned this to Hayden on the show last week. I did a, because I just, you know, got so much time on my hands here. I did a deep dive into some of my own reception perception data to try to quantify like the most misused players, guys who didn't fit the roles that they were in last year based on where they get open and the routes they ran most. DJ Moore popped up as one that was really not suited to the role he had last year. But Ray, I think he's really suited to the role that he's going to be playing in Buffalo, you know, running nines, curls, and slants, the routes that he's thoroughly good on. How do you see DJ Moore as a green light player this year?
I think I tweeted it out on Saturday night, Sunday night. I think he is one of the players that are primed to just outkick his ADP. This is a situation where his skill set matches exactly what Josh Allen needs. It's the best receiver Josh Allen has had since Stephon Diggs. And I don't want to make the same comparison, because Diggs going to Josh Allen in 2020, at that stage of Diggs' career, he's a better player. He was a better player then than what DJ Moore is now. But DJ Moore is still a good player. And when Chicago threw him the ball last year, I mean, he was still good down the field. I mean, we all remember that touchdown catch late in the season. He can still get vertical. And now he's reunited with the coach, and Joe Brady has had DJ Moore before. Joe Brady knows exactly what to do with DJ Moore. All the reports have been overwhelmingly positive about how good that he looks. There's a beautiful throw. I'm sure we can find it, where Josh Allen just uncorks it to the moon. Triple coverage, and who comes down with it? It's just a bucket drop to DJ Moore. I think this Shakir is a good player, and I think he fits a role inside this offense, but DJ Moore brings something else to the table. And I've got him projected right around 1,150 yards this season. I have DJ Moore inside my top 18 wide receivers. I love the spot for him. We're not talking dynasty. I'm not talking 5 years from now. I'm not talking 2 years from now. This season, this is a massive upgrade for Buffalo. As long as Moore can stay on the field, which I don't think he's got this big history of injuries, DJ Moore is going to produce, and probably produce at a high clip when you got the damn MVP at quarterback. They've been searching for a receiver that got it in Moore.
Yeah, just where he goes, the range that he's in, 65th overall ADP, like there's a lot of guys there, players I like, you know, Christian Watson, you've got him as a green light ADP. Some of the other players in that same range, you know, Davante Adams, Mike Evans go a little bit earlier. Moore's just got a much higher path to a massive target share than the other players there. So I'm glad we're on the same page with DJ Moore. Any other players you want to hit from a green light perspective before we toss to break here?
I know you like Christian Watson as well. I know I got an old crusty on there. Can I just touch on Debo real quick? Sure. Is that okay that I'm green lighting Debo? I'm not talking dynasty.
An old crusty.
This season, Debo was a good player last year in an awful Washington environment. It was terrible. It was just Josh Johnson, who got drafted when Joe Flacco got drafted in 2008, was throwing him passes at one point this season, come week 17. But when you're thinking about this Niners team, Evans already dinged up. We're not counting on Christian Kirk. The answer is no. Kittle coming off an Achilles tear. Mike Evans is quad, not hammy, banged up a little bit. Seems like the only one that's available. And San Francisco has every incentive to just use the living hell out of Debo Samuel this season, both as a rusher. He'll probably be the second leading rusher in San Francisco behind Christian McCaffrey, and his involvement on the receiving game. You're talking about cheap production that costs you nothing. And an offense that we all think is going to be one of the better offenses in the NFL. Again, volume opportunity for a 17-week season. I think Debo Samuel at the end of your drafts or wherever he's going is a really good bet as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get excited.
Go ahead, Mike. If you don't like it, say it, damn it. Just because I got one for you in the next segment. But it's not Dynasty, right? Matt, who else is Brock Purdy's 4,000 yards going to?
Stribling, bro. It's going to be Dazon Stribling. I'm telling you, his skill set actually stands out.
There's still 1,200, 13, 14, 2,000 more yards of passing to go around.
I kind of just like getting away from the Niners offense in general. It's gone from a really green light offense to me to one that I'm not really like super invested in at this point. And I'm just skeptical about what Debo's got left, man. I mean, I think he could probably be a useful, I think he'll be a much better real life player for the Niners than he will be a guy that is helping us in our fantasy lineups. Unless you're doing best ball drafts, like late on, I think he's probably a fine enough pick. But yeah, in a managed league, I'm going to let you have Debo. That one's good. That one's going to be yours.
We always got to have one or two. So we'll write this one down and keep a star next to old Debo.
All right, well, we will see if we disagree or agree on some of our red light and yellow light players. The guys were not really clicking in drafts. We will get into that right after this break. All right, so that was some fun talk before the break. A little positivity, guys we like. There's actually one we didn't mention that maybe I'll try to jump in on the sleepers segment a little bit later. Pretty close to the outside the top 180p anyways. Whatever. Point being, let's talk about some guys that we don't like this year, Ray. And because I am not a courteous host, I'm a poor host, I'm a bad host, I'm going to let you go first. We're talking red light, yellow light players. Why don't you tell us one of the professional athletes that you are not drafting here this season?
Okay. And this doesn't mean I dislike, I'm happy for this player, right? But my boy, Antoine Pierce.
he's not Antoine this year. He's Alec this year.
Yeah. He is no longer Antoine. His name is Alec Pierce. I want no part of him, Matt. He got paid the bag. We talked about him. We had fun with the community and embraced the name of Antoine. We got him projected high at Yahoo. Damn it, I got him projected high. Yet everything I've heard since he got his contract has been not good, not good, not good. And I think there was somebody had tweeted out that he was walking around Colts camp the other day and just said he's not moving around like a player that's anywhere close to returning on the field. You're talking about a guy who had 47 catches last year and 1,000 yards, got paid a significant amount of money. Quarterback's coming off of an Achilles tear. We're already projecting a lot of volume for Jonathan Taylor, Josh Downs, Tyler Warren, and you want me to draft Alec Pierce right now? I want to like him. I want him to be on the field. This is a guy that was an Iron Man. He just never left the field, and now he can't get on the field. It's just concerning right now with what's going on with him to draft him at all, Matt. I know he's ranked in our ADP, but I haven't seen him come off the board one time.
Yeah, it's really tough to click him at this point because he might miss games into the regular season now at this point. Like, that hasn't been ruled out. He has not practiced at all this summer after the ankle surgery. It's and by the way, like, that doesn't even take into account, like, we're projecting him here at Yahoo for 100 targets. That's almost 20 more than he's ever seen in his entire career. I know that he missed games last year, but 84 targets last season was a career high. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't even quite had that role yet. He was running really hot last year as a vertical X receiver, but he needs to, and listen, I think he's someone that can do that, you know, in terms of he can do a little bit more than just run the straight line go routes. I think he's got more in his bag, but him getting to, like, I think it would be a miracle if he saw 120 targets this year. And there are guys going in that range of the draft where he doesn't necessarily need 120 targets because he can make the big plays and everything. But there are guys going in that range of the draft where I think I can just find a similar ceiling case and way less risk. So I'm with you. He's a guy that I think makes sense as a red light player.
Yeah. There's not enough in that quote that was just up on the screen, basically saying we want him 100%. And whenever that is, it we'll know when we know, or it is what it is. It just doesn't inspire confidence. They're not saying he's going to be ready for week one. And I do think there's a chance he misses games. He could very well be a player, Matt, that you and Boone are talking about as like a waiver wire pickup down the line. If he starts the season on PUP, or people are like, I'm cutting him, I'm not holding this guy. And then maybe if he gets back by midseason or whatever, but just right now today, I don't feel good about where he's at relative to ADP.
I'll go a little earlier here for my red light guy and just say Rashee Rice is a glaring red light to me. Like, I'm not clicking Rashee Rice when he's going this early. And I get it. Like, obviously, it sounds crazy to say that for a guy who the last 2 years is wide receiver 5 in points per game in fantasy, and he's wide receiver 12 in points per game since he entered the NFL. And yet the per game is obviously doing some pretty heavy lifting there, because this is not somebody who's been consistently available for a variety of reasons. And I think we once again have to have questions about his availability this year, One, because he's coming off an injury, plus he's just always like an off-field risk. So there's that part of it too. But Ray, I'm also, I'd be pretty shocked if he walks into the same role that he has had over the last few years. And one of the biggest reasons I feel that way is because, like, they did the whole, hey, we're running running everything through Rashee Rice last year, and that offense was not very good. Like, they have a lot of reasons to want to change. And my thought process is that Kenneth Walker is someone who was brought in here to be the engine of this offense, to get a lot of, like, a lot of what they did last year with Rice was extension of the run game underneath type of targets. And now they've got a run game. They were the worst run game in the NFL the last 2 years from an explosiveness standpoint. Now I think they're going to be one of the most explosive run games in the NFL with Kenneth Walker. You look at Rashee Rice, there have been 112 receivers to run 600 or more routes since he came to the NFL in 2023. His 4.69 air yards per target ranks 112th out of those 112 wide receivers. He needs a ton of volume to get home in his given role, especially if the goal line stuff evaporates, which I just kind of imagine that's what Walker is here to do. There's just way too much risk for me to take, both from an off-field, a health, and just the player archetype perspective. Too much risk for me to take him where he goes, you know, 32nd overall pick, especially around all those wide receivers we talked about earlier that we like.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm going to disagree with you, but not with because of any of the points that you say, because everything you said is valid. The yards per attempt are low. His air yards are low. Where he's drafted does feel a little high. But I just look at this team, and I'm looking at Worthy and the state that he's in right now, and nobody believes in that.
Yeah.
Tyquan Thornton, he's got a specific role inside of this offense, and then we've got another year on Travis Kelce. Kenneth Walker absolutely changes the shape of this offense, and I'm not sure many people actually know what it's going to look like with Kenneth Walker, because the last time Kansas City had like a really good running back, it was Kareem Hunt, like back in 2017. It's been almost 9 years since then. I'm not talking Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm not talking about Pacheco here and there, but like a legitimate, this guy people look at as a really good NFL running back. Early Kareem Hunt, people felt that way. I do think it changes the offense. Where Rashee Rice doesn't concern me is, despite what we think about how talented or how good he is, when he's on the field, he is hyper-targeted. And despite the fact that his low yards per reception, sub five, right? He's the only player over the last 5 years that's commanded a 20% red zone share in the years in which he's played. There's nobody else that's done it. Rashee Rice has done it twice. They target him inside the 5 yard line at such a high clip. And then when you've got the quarterback, I think that's why we haven't projected on here for quite a few touchdowns. What did it, was the projection from Yahoo 9 touchdowns for Rashee Rice? Is that what was on the screen? Or maybe that's my projections for Rashee Rice. What do we have? Yeah, he's 9 TDs and 1,000 yards, which, to be fair, I've got him at 10 TDs and right around less than 1,100 yards. So I'm not out here saying that this dude is a top five, top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. Absolutely
no, I don't think anyone
not.
Says
I don't have
that.
Him
yeah.
No, but for the role in which he's going to occupy, I'm still clicking him. Not dynasty. I'm talking about 2026. I just find it hard that anybody else is going to take enough away from him, especially with Mahomes being on the field.
Now, it's a really convincing argument. And, you know, this, honestly, if we're being super transparent, like maybe this is just a blind spot for me because I just don't buy into the player. And look, sometimes I've been right about that, where like I've been skeptical about the player and, you know, eventually that role does disappear because someone is just better than him. Right now, there's not really someone that's better than him, even though, of course, I do believe that Cyrus, like, I'm not kidding. Like, Cyrus Allen, I think, might legitimately play for this team because they're just so bereft of wide receivers at this point. And he does bring a skill set that they, including Rashee Rice, does not have. But it's August 10th, and this is a fifth round rookie. Like, we got a long way to go before Cyrus Allen is eating into Rashee Rice's target share. And honestly, Ray, what I think we have to hope for is that Rice just shows us something that he hasn't yet, you know, which is that he's got to, especially if they're going to be like a downfield, if they're going to be like a heavy downfield run game, they're going to want to push off play action, get under center and stuff. And Rice hasn't shown that yet. Doesn't mean he can't, you know, sometimes guys get better, and I kind of hope he does get better. That's what I'd like to see.
Matt, can I just say this real quick, dude? But you and I, the way that, and I think the people want to hear this, because, oh my God, Matt and Ray gonna disagree on this one. Harmon doesn't like him. Ray loves him. I don't think if I were building a receiver in a lab, there's nothing that Rashee Rice does that I would put on one of those components of an ultimate receiver. But his role, you just looking at the usage, and it's hard to project Mahomes for where he's going to be, how he extends plays, helps his receivers get open, and then look at Worthy, Thornton, Kelsey, and say, okay, if it's a one-year game that we're playing for a seasonal league, if he's on the field, it's target city inside of a Mahomes-led offense. Long-term, I ain't got nothing for you, man, because I'm not stumping up for him for long-term. But this season, the usage is just probably going to still be there, in my opinion, but that doesn't mean anything that you're saying about the player or a potential change in role is wrong. I don't know who would take it from him this year right now.
Yeah, I think that's where we're on the same page about the player and some of the limitations there. I just feel like that might change with the arrival of Kenneth Walker, and you are feeling like it doesn't, and we'll have to see what happens here. We have a lot of other kind of some yellow light players. We talked about two of our red light guys here. You've got Mike Evans, DK Metcalf. I've got Cortland Sutton. I'm like kind of hesitant to call Tedrick McMillan a yellow light player. I'm a little bit behind. I wanted to make an aggressive case here on him, but 59 minutes into the show, I'm feeling like I don't want to make that case as a yellow light guy. So he just truly is probably more of like a neutral player for me, not someone I'm like, even where he went in our draft today, I actually almost took him. So you know what? We're going to strike that from the record. Not a yellow light player for me. I've got Cortland Sutton. You've got DK Metcalf, Mike Evans. The other yellow light player that I have that's a little higher in the draft is AJ Brown. Here's the thing. If AJ Brown was going in the 30s, I would be totally fine with him. I maybe wouldn't be green light on him, but if he was going in the 30s, I'm ranked as my 34th overall player, I'd be totally down to draft him, because there I think the risk that he's not the same player, which I do think is present, would be a little bit more baked in. But at 24th overall on Yahoo the last 2 days, like end of the second round, maybe very early third round, I just think that's too aggressive again for a player that, it is in some form of decline to me. I believe that some of the GPS tracking data shows that from him last year, from folks I've talked to. I just think he's still a good player if he's the guy that he was last year, but he's no longer peak elite AJ Brown. And I feel like we're drafting him end of the second round as if he's still peak elite AJ Brown. So do you feel a little bit differently about AJ than I do? Are you a little more optimistic? Cause I just wish he was a round cheaper.
No, it's a little too pricey. If he fell, I'd have no problem taking a shot, right? Offense, Drake May, AJ, I'm probably all alpha there. But second round, I've done a few, Matt, and I have not. I kind of don't even see his name right there. I just go somewhere else. I'm looking at a running back, or and I like AJ Brown. I 8 touchdowns. That'd be really good. I mean, if he's getting you 8 touchdowns and 10.53. That's a really good season. I got him for a few more yards, one less touchdown, so it probably equals out. But you're not going to hear any disagreement from me on this one. I don't know how many times I'd be clicking him at the back of the second round right now.
Yeah, I think it'll be good for the Patriots in some way. I just hope if he's like their vertical X receiver, I don't know that suits like his current game at this point. So hopefully his usage is a little bit different than what I'm expecting. And again, he just goes in a range where I think it's a little tough. So like I mentioned, you've got you've got Mike Evans as a yellow light player, but like DK Metcalf, Cortland Sutton, I think we all know why Mike Evans would be yellow light. I don't know that we need to do a lot of breakdown there, but the Metcalf Sutton yellow lights, I think actually will transition us perfectly into our sleepers segment here. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we talk sleepers, one of the big reasons I feel like Ray is probably yellow light on Metcalf and I'm yellow light on Sutton is that I'm looking right outside the top 100 and there's a lot of appealing names, whereas those guys just kind of go a little bit too early for me. So we will get into those guys, the top 100, the outside top 100 sleepers. We will get into those right after this break. All right, we're back, and it's time for everybody's favorite little segment here. This is the sleepers at the wide receiver position. These are the guys that are going outside the top 100 in Yahoo ADP over the last 7 days. Got six guys for us to discuss here. And frankly, if you're familiar with my brand, you're probably not surprised by a lot of these names here. I'd also like to add Jalen Coker to the mix here as well. Some of my skepticism with Tetero McMillan is just, I think Jalen Coker is a stone cold baller, but you know, what can you do? All right, let's talk Josh Downs though here first, Ray, because number one, I know this is a player you and I have discussed in the past. And number two, producer JB. That's right. I talk about producer Colin probably too much on the show. JB, that's he's the guy who's really got the whole program on his back. He tells me that the YouTube chat is fiending for some Josh Downs talk. That's how I know I've collected the right people here on this show. They're fiending for their Josh Downs talk. So, Ray, are you in or are you out on Josh Downs as a sleeper at the 113th overall pick?
Yeah, man, I got him projected pretty high. I need Josh Downs on the field, Matt. And anybody that's familiar with me since his time at North Carolina, my biggest thing is I need Downs on the field. Stay on the field. But yeah, Antoine's limping around. I don't even want to hear any of the other receivers there. I don't want to hear it. Don't
Laquan
even mention
Treadwell,
it.
You're not hoping for the year.
Listen,
11
I've already
breakout.
Treylon Burks' name today. We're not going Treadwell. I'm not getting that dirty right now, Matt. But yeah, it should be Downs and Warren. I mean, it should be Downs and Warren. So outside the top 100, the spirit of this, I think he's in line for higher targets than this. I've got him projected for more than this as well. So just stay on the field, Josh.
Yeah, it just has to be healthy. And of course, right now he's dealing with a little bit of a groin injury, but not a huge deal. He should be available this week for practice. Not too worried about that. But yeah, and I think there's just no way he is. And no, I am not doing any pen eating bets. Okay, I'm not doing that this year. So Johnny Airport number two, get back on the plane. You're staying on the tarmac. We're not launching any airport bets. So apologies for the audio listeners. They're not seeing the YouTube comment. They're always surprise, surprise. Here comes down. Yeah, this is the year for Josh Downs. Okay. All right. As long as he's able to stay healthy.
Let him have it, YouTube. Let him have it, YouTube.
Yeah, come at me. I'm not worried about it. As long as Josh Downs stays healthy, this is the year for Downs. There is no way he is not playing in two receiver sets. And frankly, I don't even know if that matters that much. Like, it just, he is one of their best 11 players on offense. They're not going to have him be a 50% snap player. If anything, I wouldn't do the fantasy bet for pen eating bet for Josh Downs. I would do like a route percentage when he's healthy pen eating bet, but I'm also not going to do that because I've matured since last year. So yeah, Downs at this point, he's a good player. He will be highly targeted. I believe he will be on the field, Ray.
Matt, can I ask you this real quick? And I know you'll talk about it throughout the various shows, but in a situation like this where a vertical stretcher, right? Alec Pierce is out and we've got these teams that could go to some heavier sets. Do you think Downs could work in one receiver set sporadically for Indianapolis if Pierce isn't out there? Like, are they really going to put Nick Westbrook? You're going to put your most talented guy out there. Would they give him a chance to do it? And does that give him a little more upside there if they try to deploy something like that?
Now, if they had by the way, this team probably shouldn't have like rage traded A.D. Mitchell in the middle of last year. That does seem a little short-sighted at this point.
Probably. Like,
yeah. That seems a little bit short-sighted, even though A.D. does have his limitations. Not one of the sleepers we're talking about here in this segment. However, God, the thing is, we saw even last year, the Chargers would take Ladd McConkey off the field in those one receiver sets, and it would be Trey Harris because he's simply just bigger and a better blocker. Mm-hmm. And that's a way to me, I feel like you can serve down. So I'd be pretty surprised if he was like the lone receiver 13 personnel for this team. Okay. But Pierce, when he's healthy, fits that pretty much perfectly. So I'm going to throw some of the other names out here that I had listed as sleepers, and you tell me which one draws your eye the most. Jaden Reed at 119 overall, Michael Wilson, 111 overall, Quentin Johnson, 101 overall, Casey Concepcion, 132 overall. You can throw Denzel Boston in there if you want to. Todd Monken said today he's going to get some first team run as the X receiver. And I threw Travis Hunter out as 126th overall ADP. We know the deal with Hunter. He could be something. He could be totally nothing. So any of those guys you really gravitate to as a sleeper here?
I'm not going to say Michael Wilson, okay? I'm just not going to do it. I love Michael Wilson. Everybody knows I love Michael Wilson. I'm going to stay away from Travis
Hunter.
Yeah,
you talked about him last
week. Yeah, I'm going to stay. I want to bring up Jaden Reed because all I'm seeing is, hell, I had Christian Watson in one of the green lights, Matthew Golden taking a step. I hear nobody, no, nobody discussing Jaden Reed right now. And like when I projected him, he projected pretty well. I like how they use him in different areas throughout the field. We know he plays in the slot, but one thing that I keep coming back to is when they get inside that money zone, 5-yard line, they're always scheming up stuff for him. Crossing across the field, some orbit motion to get him the ball and use his yak ability to run it in. Like, are we kind of underrating how good Jaden Reed can be for an offense that we think could be pretty good? No one really talks about Jaden Reed, Matt.
Yeah, he kind of goes in the no man's land between Christian Watson and Matthew Golden. And look, I have questions about Matthew Golden, but I also think his ADP is so late that you might as well take shots. I'm not opposed to taking Matthew Golden, but I have a lot of confidence in Reed as the 119th overall player, as I mentioned. Wasn't healthy last year, just pretty much a lost year for him from the beginning. Remember, he had the foot injury in training camp, and then he tried to play through that, and he broke his collarbone in week two, and then he had surgery on both injuries last year. So kind of a lost season for him. The Packers still give him a contract extension. He's another one, Ray, similar with Downs, where the variable for him has been, is he going to play in two receiver sets? I think it's more likely that Downs plays in two receiver sets more than Jaden Reed. One, because I think Downs is a better route runner and a better separator against man coverage, but Reed is still capable there. I just also think it matters less in Green Bay because this looks like a team is going to play a lot of 11 personnel. They traded their depth receivers to play these three guys, Watson, Reed, and Golden. And their second tight end with Luke Musgrave banged up is like nobody. So I think they'll play 11 personnel. Their defense is going to be worse this year. Their run game is probably going to be a little bit worse this year. There's a chance that we're just underrating the pass volume. And if anyone's underrating Jaden Reed, the player, I'll be buying stock on Jaden Reed, who I think is a very good and proven player in the NFL.
I just wanted to touch on that one. I mean, they're going to run 11. Like you said, Musgrave kind of, I don't even know who the two or three tight end would be in Green Bay. I want to see what Golden develops into. I'm with you. He gets drafted so late. I want to bet on the draft capital. I want to bet on the talent. I just think Reed is this, what people normally do is they'll just click Watson and let somebody else draft Reed. But I do think there's a little bit extra there with Jaden Reed if he's healthy this season. You know, that's the big thing. Is he healthy?
Casey Concepcion, I do think, is a really interesting sleeper this year, man. You know, we talked about him as a prospect, and it's the Browns. I get it. Yet he's still somebody that goes so late that him and Jordan Tyson was the other player that we didn't mention earlier that was a green light for me that I've kind of like. Casey's a guy I always knew I'd be in on because I know he's going to go late, 132nd overall. But like Jordan Tyson in the 90s is a pick. I just want to actually touch on him real quick before we go to break. He's somebody I've really warmed up to this year because, number one, he's healthy. And I just think there's so much opportunity. And his where he wins as a route runner against zone coverage on some of these breaking routes, especially breaking outside the numbers, really complements Chris Olave, what he does well. So Tyson is a guy that doesn't quite qualify for this segment because he goes inside the top 100. But I do think is a really viable rookie sleeper this year. As some of the other rookies like Mekhi Lemon, you know, not practicing at this point. Like I've gotten a little more excited about some of these other rookies right now. I think you're muted, Ray.
Yeah, I was muted. I was like, that was a good one. We're talking sleepers and you said Mekhi Lemon. I'm just going to say the name Dontavian Wicks and I'm going to get to Casey Concepcion. Oh.
We'll put a pin in Wicks. We're going to talk about him in the next segment, okay. Sadly enough.
Okay. The Cleveland receiving room, it should just be Denzel Boston and Casey Concepcion. It really should be.
But yes, Jerry Judy's really going to be on the field.
It should be. But Judy's going to be out there for as long as he's on that team. We talked about him being a trade candidate. I like Casey and I like Boston. I just think Boston has he's the Cedric Tillman, right? Like the one that can stay healthy. At least in that iteration of Cleveland's offense, downfield, everything that you see Boston doing is posts downfield. He did that at Washington. That's what he did at Washington. So I like both KC and Boston, and I'm hoping that those are the two that they just end up rolling with at some point sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I know it's just training camps, but I don't see a lot of good reviews of Jerry Jeudy in training camp from the Cleveland Browns reporters and everything like that. Maybe I'm following the wrong people, so correct me if I'm wrong there. Todd Monken's not a guy that's going to be like, oh, well, I got to play him because of his salary. He's going to play the best guys. He's going to play the guys he likes. And I think he pretty clearly likes KC Concepcion and Denzel Boston. Now, of course, Cleveland quarterback situation. They're really trying to make sure it's Deshaun Watson. I think they're giving Deshaun Watson the heavy edge. But I think we see Shedeur at some point. I think Shedeur can get these guys to football enough to like evaluate them and for them to be, you know, again, we're not saying they're definitely going to work out, but they're sleepers in your drafts this year. But I teased the Dontayvion Wicks talk. We're going to take a quick break, and then, yes, we're going to go full sicko mode for some deep, deep, deep sleepers at the wide receiver position in our Draft Day Blueprint series. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and welcome to Draft Day Blueprint presented by Orgain Creatine. Whether you're training like it's game day or preparing to battle it out on draft day, Orgain Creatine helps you give the muscle strength to fuel harder and push faster. Upgrade your performance today with Orgain. And today, we're going to highlight the best fantasy ecosystems for wide receivers in our Draft Day Blueprint segment here, Ray Garvin. And we're going to go absolute sicko level for these wide receiver takes on this one. Because, listen, we said this at the top of the show. We've talked about these trees plenty throughout the program. We know that the McVay / Shanahan and Ben Johnson tree offenses, they have been huge boosts to overall fantasy offensive efficiency and certainly to wide receivers in recent NFL history. So again, we know the big boys. We know the Ben Johnsons, the Mike McDaniels, the Liam Cohns, these guys that everyone's talking about. I thought, let's take a look at five new play callers off of these two respective trees and see if we can't find some clarity in what I would say are ambiguous wide receiver hierarchies with these teams. So let's start in Baltimore with the Ravens, who hired former Bears offensive coordinator Declan Doyle. We know Zay Flowers is the established one. However, number two, number three receiver, we got Rashad Bateman, we got Jacoby Lane getting a lot of pop at a training camp. I said this was going to be sicko deep sleeper level stuff. So I promises made, promises kept. Rashad Bateman, Jacoby Lane, deep sleeper appeal for you in an offense that I think is going to be real. I'm actually really excited about Declan Doyle. Maybe you can tell me I'm wrong on this. Where are you at with the Ravens wide receiver room?
Like, I feel like somebody is trying to get us to go against each other right here. Cause I don't want any wide receiver two in Baltimore. Can it change? Sure. But over the last 3 years, it has been a position that gets you excited and then always just lets you down, right? They just, Lamar Jackson is not, and I called him Shoddy B coming out of Minnesota. I loved him. And I still think he's a talented player when he's on the field. I think the change in offense can absolutely invoke more volume for the other receivers. But I don't think it's just a Bateman or a Lane thing. The vibes around Mark Andrews have not been positive. I've been wanting to talk about him, maybe being a sleeper tight end. But a lot of the vibes are a lot of drops. He needs to get going because the Ravens are counting on him. Somebody else is going to have to step up. So whether that's Bateman or Lane, it feels like somebody other than is going to have to step up. So it's got to be somebody other than Zay.
I know I've said over the course of the offseason, my therapist will not let me talk about Rashad Bateman. I'm starting to talk about Rashad Bateman again. I'm not saying you guys need to draft him in fantasy. I'm not. But I put a post out over the weekend highlighting his comments about how he's going to move around the field, you know, a little bit more. Just want to note, 180 wide receivers have run 500 or more routes since he came into the NFL in 2021. He ranks 178th out of those 180 in slot percentage. I do think the emergence of Jacoby Lane, the addition of Declan Doyle, is going to allow all of these receivers to move around a little bit more. Certainly Bateman, I think, will get more chances from different alignments, which will be a welcome thing for him. I don't know if it's enough to be fantasy relevant outside of best ball formats, but certainly I think both Lane and Bateman are forgotten about guys deep in best ball formats. And I think Zay Flowers, again, he is the right answer here. I have Zay ranked as my wide receiver 14 right now. I have him as my 29th overall player. I'm really excited about the season Zay Flowers is about to have in this offense. But let's go to Las Vegas with Clint Kubiak, former Seahawks offensive coordinator. He is now the head coach calling plays. Trey Tucker, Jalen Naylor, the likely top two guys. doesn't seem like anyone's really separating from the Jack Besh, Malik Benson, Dante Thornton might not even make the roster, like these guys. Any interest? This one's tough for me. Any interest in a Raiders receiver here, or is this just the answer is more Brock Bowers?
Well, the answer is Brock Bowers, right? That is the answer. The answer is Brock Bowers. But we're not talking about fifth round picks. We're not talking about 10th round picks. We're talking, where's Trey Tucker or Jalen Naylor going? They're like late undrafted. Last round,
yeah,
undrafted. One of them. Matt, one of them will be relevant to a degree, not change your league, but in a best ball, you're a little more inclined for, I mean, Trey Tucker gave you 3 touchdowns in a week, right? That was all he did. Mm-hmm. But again, he went off in 1 week. I do think whether it's Mendoza or Kirk Cousins, it's just going to be such a better offensive environment in Las Vegas where we've done this before. As a fantasy community, we've done this before thinking an offense would be putrid. And then we look up and Houston at that time was a lot better than anybody thought it would be. It's hard to be worse than what Las Vegas was last year when you are throwing out Dante Thornton in week one. I think Naylor and Tucker are better players. The answer is Brock Bowers. Last round or priority waiver wire watch list kind of guys, I'd put the Raiders down there.
Yeah, I think Naylor is interesting in this system where they're going to want to hit some explosive outbreaking routes off play action. And that is what Naylor did really well as a kind of a role player in Minnesota. Not saying he's going to be special or anything, but I do think he fits into this offense and some of the shot plays they want to take. I still have a candle lit for Jack Besh, but it's more of a dynasty-based thing and more of like an NFL role player thing than a redraft fantasy option. But maybe he comes along when the games actually start. I don't think he's ever going to be a great practice player, and I'm also not 100% sure that they have like the right role for him with, you know, Brock Bowers as the slot-based option here. We'll see about that. Really just fascinated how this offense comes together. Dolphins. Bobby Slowick is the offensive coordinator. Of course, he's been an offensive coordinator before. He was the pass game coordinator in Miami last year. This is one of the weakest wide receiver depth charts you've probably ever seen. And yet, it sounds like, Ray, that Malik Washington and Caleb Douglas have solidified themselves as the one and the two in some order, with Chris Bell coming back midseason off of the injury. Malik Willis getting some good reviews in training camp. Any interest at all in like a true, true flyer on some of these Dolphins receivers?
I like Washington. I do. Like, I really do.
Yeah.
And
I like him as a prospect.
I think Chris Bell will be good when he's healthy and stuff. And I really am rooting for Malik Willis, but I'll just keep this one short. Not drafting them, right? They would be waiver wire guys. And I do think this is one where, what if, man, we look up and Willis is really good. He's a dynamic quarterback. They feel like they can build around him. They're letting him throw the ball more. It's like every time we think we know exactly what an offense is going to look like and what it's going to do, it's the opposite outcome happens. I'm watching. Yeah. I'm rooting for Malik Willis. I really am. I'm rooting for him. So not right now, Matt, but I'll watch him and they'll be on the waiver wire. But I'm pulling for Willis.
Yeah, more so dynasty. I just think Caleb Douglas is a little bit like slept on, not a prospect. Yes. That, you know, I charted him after the draft, like, cause he went so high.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was as bad as maybe some of the rankings would indicate. I think he's got some utility and I wouldn't be surprised if his game overlaps with Malik Willis, but it's more of a dynasty take. The guy we teased on the other side of the break here, Eagles, Sean Mannion, former Packers assistant coach, quarterback coach, Devontae Smith, again, similar to Baltimore. He's the established one. The question is who's wide receiver two and who's wide receiver three. Dontavian Wicks is going to be one of those guys. Maybe he's the long-term three when Mekhi Lemon gets rolling. But at this point, I saw Jimmy Kemsky, who covers the Eagles, say, like, it's pretty likely that Mekhi Lemon's not going to start the season, which makes sense, right? I say this all the time, Ray. I hate when rookie receivers miss valuable offseason time, and he has missed a ton of it with a hamstring injury. So you mentioned you wanted to talk Wicks. I could talk Wicks for days. So floor is yours, pal.
You look at the team, what they lost, how they may change structurally, what they just in theory drafted Mekhi Lemon to do versus what he may be available to do early in the season. They brought Wicks in, man. And Wicks in flashes shown that he can be a quality wide receiver in a very pivotal yep. year for Jalen Hurts. If you told me right now they're going to throw two wide receivers out on the field week one, I bet you it's Devontae Smith, number 6. And I don't know what number Wicks is wearing. Whatever number he has, it would likely be the guy that has Wicks on the back of his jersey. This is one where I think people are sleeping on this one, where you look up and you're like, damn, Philly's a pretty good offense. And Dontayvion Wicks somehow, he's getting 6 targets a week. And oh, that week he got 7. And oh, he's getting red zone looks. We're talking sleepers here, Matt. Wicks needs to be on the list. I don't want to get too bullish. I don't want to oversell it, but I think he needs to be on the radar for people for real.
I think so too. I think there are times where he got a little overrated as a separator, by some of the other charting metrics out there. But, you know, from a reception perception standpoint, his first season, we built this player comparison tool in the offseason that's on the site that people can check out. Wicks pops up like an annoying amount. And I was talking about this with our web developer, Zach, today. I was like, why does Wicks pop up with just like all these comps? It's because he was kind of just good enough at everything as a rookie to clearly be like a valuable third or fourth receiver. And he played a bunch of different roles that year, which, as we were talking about in our pre-show chat, smart. You got to be smart to do that. And they trusted him with a lot of different roles as the rookie receiver, like a day three guy that year. 71st percentile success rate versus man, 49th versus zone, 69th versus press. Like, nothing screaming, oh my God, special. He's one of the best separators in the NFL here. But like a guy that could run quality routes and get open as a day three rookie in that 2023 season. So yeah, I definitely, you know, no pun intended, still have the candle lit for Wicks for sure. I love that Sean Mannion, you know, was probably a part of bringing him from Green Bay. And, you know, one thing that Wicks was really good at doing was running these like in motion, these big out cuts. And that's what Jalen Hurts will throw, man.
So I was just going to tell you, I was like, I'm looking at Wicks and it's a lot of quick outs, deep outs, hitch and curl, yep. Not a lot over the middle. Like it seems to fit what Jalen Hurts wants to throw. We are in lockstep here, brother.
All right, rapid fire just on the last one here. Seahawks, Brian Flory, former 49ers tight end coach. JSN, again, we know he's the established one, but he had a historic target share, number one target share for a wide receiver from 2015 to 2025. Does any of Rashid Shaheed, Torrey Horton, or Cooper Kupp eat into his target share? Real quick, Ray, yes or no?
No.
Yeah, probably not enough to matter. Like Rashid Shaheed will make some big plays, be more involved, but unlikely. And Torrey Horton, stash on your bench in Dynasty. I think that's the right answer. I am interested to see what Elijah Arroyo, maybe more tight end usage happens in this offense. But Ray, hell of a show with you today, brother. I think it lived up to expectation. Tell people where they can check out all the work you're doing with the Trinity, especially. I want people to go check that out.
Yeah, appreciate that, Matt. Appreciate that. DDFantasyFootball.com, usage visualization, unlike Harmon. Right. We look at different things. Right. It's not so much of the routes and the success. It's really just looking at the team usage and involvement. So that's why it makes these shows so fun. So check that out on DD Fantasy Football. But Wednesday and Thursday, pieces dropping on Yahoo Fantasy. So looking at some more wide receiver stuff, looking at some stuff to help you with these early preseasons. So check out all the pieces that are dropping on Yahoo. And Matt, it's always great to do the show with you, man. Good one.
No doubt, man. This was a total blast. And reminder for folks out there, it is Yahoo Fantasy Football's 29th year. And to celebrate, we are kicking off 29 days of fantasy today. We revealed custom recipes. Commissioners can now apply unique analyst curated scoring formats right from scoring settings in your commissioner tools or straight from the Create League flow. No rebuilding settings, just a fresh way to play powered by talent and creators. Yeah, look at your boy here on the screen. Let him cook, okay? Let's get some passing touchdown boosts. You'll love to see it. 29 days of Yahoo Fantasy begins right now. And for tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking a little bit of running backs here with the guy we just showed on the screen, Justin Boone. He's going to be here with me live at 4 p.m. Eastern on this very YouTube channel. Subscribe, please, whether you listen, whether you watch, whatever, subscribe to the show. I would greatly appreciate it. Until then, see you guys tomorrow. We are out.